live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
All right, Joe Biden giving a primetime address here, his first one. Let's listen.
Now, total deaths in America, 527,726. That's more deaths than in World War I, World War II, the Vietnam War, and 9/11 combined. There were husbands, wives, sons and daughters, grandparents, friends, neighbors, young and old. They leave behind loved ones, unable to truly grieve or to heal, even to have a funeral. But I'm also thinking about everyone else who lost this past year to natural causes, by cruel fate of accident or other disease. They too died alone. They too leave behind loved ones who are hurting badly. You know, you've often heard me say before, I talk about the longest walk any parent can make is up a short flight of stairs to his child's bedroom to say, I'm sorry, I lost my job. Can't be here anymore. Like my dad told me when he lost his job in Scranton. So many of you have had to make that same walk this past year. You lost your job. You closed your business. Facing eviction, homelessness, hunger, a loss of control, maybe worst of all, a loss of hope. Watching a generation of children who may be set back up to a year or more because they've not been in school because of their loss of learning. It's the details of life that matter the most. And we miss those details, the big details and the small moments, weddings, birthdays, graduations, all the things that needed to happen but didn't. The first date, the family reunions, the Sunday night rituals. It's all has exacted a terrible cost on the psyche of so many of us. For we are fundamentally a people who want to be with others, to talk, to laugh, to hug, to hold one another. But this virus has kept us apart. And grandparents haven't seen their children or grandchildren. Parents haven't seen their kids. Kids haven't seen their friends. The things we used to do that always filled us with joy have become things we couldn't do and broke our hearts. Too often, we've turned against one another. A mask. The easiest thing to do to save lives. Sometimes it divides us. States pitted against one another instead of working with each other. Vicious hate crimes against Asian Americans who've been attacked, harassed, blamed, and scapegoated. At this very moment, so many of them, our fellow Americans, they're on the front lines of this pandemic trying to save lives. And still, they're forced to live in fear for their lives just walking down streets in America. It's wrong, it's un-American, and it must stop. Look, we know what we need to do to beat this virus. Tell the truth, follow the scientists and the science, work together. Put trust and faith in our government to fulfill its most important function, which is protecting the American people. No function more important. We need to remember the government isn't some foreign force in a distant capital. No, it's us, all of us. We the people. For you and I, that America thrives when we give our hearts, when we turn our hands to common purpose. And right now, my friends, we're doing just that. And I have to say, as your president, I'm grateful to you. Last summer, I was in Philadelphia and I met a small business owner, a woman.
Here we go.
I asked her, I said,
standard political
what do you need most? Never forget what she said to me. She said, looking me in the eyes, she said, I just want the truth. The truth. Just tell me the truth. Think of that.
That's
my fellow
with
Americans.
You.
You're owed nothing less than the truth. And for all of you asking when things will get back to normal, here is the truth. The only way to get our lives back, to get our economy back on track, is to beat the virus. You've been hearing me say that for while I was running and the last 50 days I've been president. But this is one of the most complex operations we've ever undertaken as a nation in a long time. That's why I'm using every power I have as president of the United States to put us on a war footing to get the job done. Sounds like hyperbole, but I mean it, a war footing. And thank God we're making some real progress now. In my first full day in office, I outlined for you a comprehensive strategy to beat this pandemic. We've spent every day since attempting to carry it out. 2 months ago, this country didn't have nearly enough vaccine supply to vaccinate all or ever near all of the American public. But soon we will. We've been working with vaccine manufacturers, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, to manufacture and purchase hundreds of millions of doses of these three safe, effective vaccines. And now, at the direction and with the assistance of my administration, Johnson & Johnson is working together with a competitor, Merck, to speed up and increase the capacity to manufacture new Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is one shot. In fact, just yesterday, I announced, and I met with the CEOs of both companies, I announced our plan to buy an additional 100 million doses of Johnson & Johnson vaccines. These two companies, competitors, have come together for the good of the nation, and they should be applauded for it. It's truly a national effort, just like we saw during World War II. Now, because all the work we've done, we'll have enough vaccine supply for all adults in America by the end of May. That's months ahead of schedule. And we're mobilizing thousands of vaccinators to put the vaccine in one's arm, calling active duty military, FEMA, retired doctors and nurses, administrators, and those to administer the shots. And we've been creating more places to get the shots. We've made it possible for you to get a vaccine in nearly any one of 10,000 pharmacies across the country, just like you get your flu shot. We're also working with governors and mayors in red states and blue states to set up and support nearly 600 federally supported vaccination centers that administers hundreds of thousands of shots per day. You can drive up to a stadium or a large parking lot, get your shot, never leave your car, and drive home in less than an hour. We've been sending vaccines to hundreds of community health centers all across America, located in underserved areas. And we've been deploying, and we will deploy more, mobile vehicles and pop-up clinics to meet you where you live so those who are least able to get the vaccine are able to get it. We continue to work on making at-home testing available. And we've been focused on serving people in the hardest-hit communities of this pandemic, Black, Latino, Native American, and rural communities. So what does all this add up to? When I took office 50 days ago, only 8% of the Americans after months, only 8% of those over the age of 65 had gotten their first vaccination. Today, that number is 65%. Just 14% of Americans over the age of 75, 50 days ago, had gotten their first shot. Today, that number is well over 70%. With new guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC that came out on Monday, it means simply this. Millions and millions of grandparents who went months without being able to hug their grandkids can now do so. And the more people are fully vaccinated, the CD will continue to provide additional guidance on what you can do in the workplace, places of worship with your friends, as well as travel. When I came into office, you may recall, I set a goal that many of you said was that kind of way over the top. I said I intended to get 100 million shots in people's arms in my first 100 days in office. Tonight, I can say we're not only going to meet that goal, we're going to beat that goal. Because we're actually on track to reach this goal of 100 million shots in arms on my 60th day in office. No other country in the world has done this. None. Now, I want to talk about the next steps we're thinking about. First, tonight, I'm announcing that I will direct all states, tribes, and territories to make all adults, people 18 and over, eligible to be vaccinated no later than May 1. Let me say that again. All adult Americans will be eligible to get a vaccine no later than May 1. That's much earlier than expected. News. Let me be clear. That doesn't mean everyone's going to have that shot immediately, but it means you'll be able to get in line beginning May 1. Every adult will be eligible to get their shot.
That's good.
And to do this, we're going to go from 1 million shots a day that I promised in December, before I was sworn in, to maintaining, beating our current pace of 2 million shots a day, outpacing the rest of the world. Secondly, at the time when every adult is eligible in May, we will launch, with our partners, new tools to make it easier for you to find the vaccine and where to get the shot, including a new website that will help you first find the place to get vaccinated and the one nearest you. No more searching day and night for an appointment for you and your loved ones. Thirdly, with the passage of the American Rescue Plan, and I thank again the House and Senate for passing it, and my announcement last month of a plan to vaccinate teachers and school staff, including bus drivers, we can accelerate massive nationwide effort to reopen our schools safely and meet my goal that I stated at the same time about 100 million shots of opening a majority of K through 8 schools in my first 100 days in office. This is going to be the number one priority of my new Secretary of Education, Miguel Cardona.
Fourth, this speech is so boring.
In the coming weeks,
it's so boring, I have to say it.
We'll issue
I have to say it.
On what
okay,
you can
it's maybe wonderfully boring. We'll analyze afterwards, but it you
to
can't argue with
confusion,
it.
To keep people safe and encourage more people to get vaccinated. And finally, fifth, and maybe most importantly, I promise I will do everything in my power. I will not relent until we beat this virus. But I need you, the American people. I need you. I need every American to do their part.
This is real.
That's not hyperbole. I need you.
No,
I need you to get vaccinated when it's your turn and when you can find an opportunity. And to help your family, your friends, your neighbors get vaccinated as well.
This isn't political. This is real.
Because here's the point. If we do all this, if we do our part, if we do this together, by July the 4th, there's a good chance you, your families and friends will be able to get together in your backyard or in your neighborhood and have a cookout or a barbecue and celebrate Independence Day. That doesn't mean large events with lots of people together, but it does mean small groups will be able to get together. After this long, hard year, that will make this Independence Day something truly special. Where we not only mark our independence as a nation, but we begin to mark our independence from this virus. But to get there, we can't let our guard down. This fight is far from order, from over. As I told the woman in Pennsylvania, I'll tell you the truth. A July 4th with your loved ones is the goal. But a goal, a lot can happen. Conditions can change. The scientists have made clear that things may get worse again as new variants of the virus spread. We've got work to do to ensure that everyone has confidence in the safety and effectiveness of all three vaccines. So my message to you is this. Listen to Dr. Fauci, one of the most distinguished and trusted voices in the world. He's assured us the vaccines are safe. They underwent rigorous scientific review. I know they're safe. Vice President Harris and I know they're safe. That's why we got the vaccine publicly in front of cameras, so for the world to see, so you could see us do it.
Is Trump not getting it publicly?
The first lady and the second gentleman also got vaccinated.
The second gentleman.
Talk to your family, friends, your neighbors, the people you know best who've gotten the vaccine. We need everyone to get vaccinated. We need everyone to keep washing their hands, stay socially distanced, and keep wearing the mask as recommended by the CDC. Because even if we devote every resource we have, beating this virus and getting back to normal depends on national unity. And national unity isn't just how politics and politicians vote in Washington, what the loudest voices say on cable or online. Unity is what we do together as fellow Americans. Because if we don't stay vigilant and the conditions change, then we may have to reinstate restrictions to get back on track. And please, we don't want to do that again.
No, we don't. So 4th of July?
This is not the time to let up. Just as we were emerging from a dark winter into a hopeful spring and summer is not the time to not stick with the rules. I'll close with this. We've lost so much over the last year. We've lost family and friends. We've lost businesses and dreams we spent years building. We've lost time with each other. And our children have lost so much time with their friends, time with their schools. No graduation ceremonies this spring. No graduations from college, high school, moving up ceremonies. You know, and there's something else we lost. We lost faith in whether our government and our democracy can deliver on really hard things for the American people. But as I stand here tonight, we're proving once again something I've said time and time again to the probably tired of hearing me say it. I say it to foreign leaders and domestic alike. It's never, ever a good bet to bet against the American people. America is coming back. The development, manufacture, and distribution of vaccines in record time is a true miracle of science. It's one of the most extraordinary achievements any country has ever accomplished. We also just saw the Perseverance rover land on Mars. Stunning images of our dreams that are now a reality. Another example of the extraordinary American ingenuity, commitment, and belief in science and one another. And today, I signed into law the American Rescue Plan, an historic piece of legislation that delivers immediate relief to millions of people, includes $1,400 in direct rescue checks, payments. That means a typical family of four earning about $110,000 will get checks for $5,600 deposited if they have direct deposit or in a check, a treasury check. It extends unemployment benefits. It helps small businesses. It lowers health care premiums for many. It provides food and nutrition, keeps families in their homes. And it will cut child poverty in this country in half, according to the experts. And it funds all the steps I've just described to beat the virus and create millions of jobs. In the coming weeks and months, I'll be traveling along with the First Lady, the Vice President, the Second Gentleman, members of my cabinet, to speak directly to you, to tell you the truth about how the American Rescue Plan meets the moment. And if it fails at any pace, I will acknowledge that it failed. but it will not. About how after long, dark years, one whole year, there is hope and light of better days ahead. If we all do our part, this country will be vaccinated soon. Our economy will be on the mend. Our kids will be back in school. And we'll have proven once again that this country can do anything, hard things, big things, important things.
Hard things, big.
Except increase the minimum wage, but.
No one could have imagined what we were about to go through. But now we're coming through it. And it's a shared experience that binds us together as a nation. We are bound together by the loss and the pain of the days that have gone by. We're also bound together by the hope and the possibilities of the days in front of us. My fervent prayer for our country is that after all we've been through, we'll come together as one people. One nation, one America. I believe we can and we will. We're seizing this moment, and history, I believe, will record. We faced and overcame one of the toughest and darkest periods in this nation's history, darkest we've ever known. I promise you, we'll come out stronger with a renewed faith in ourselves, a renewed commitment to one another, to our communities and to our country. This is the United States of America. And there's nothing.
Yes, it is.
Nothing. From the bottom of my heart, I believe this. There's nothing we can't do when we do it together. So God bless you all. And please, God, give solace to all those people who lost someone. And may God protect our troops. Thank you for taking the time to listen. I look forward to seeing you.
Okay. All right. So Joe Biden just gave his first national address to the country. Man, we have elected the polar opposite of Donald Trump. That is the country saying no.
In terms of like presentation.
Yes. Yeah. So in terms of almost everything, but first, that speech was wonderfully boring. I mean, my God, that was, I mean, Joe Biden thinks that whispering is like has a powerful rhetorical effect, and he does the Biden lean in, which he did in the middle. No, wait. No, seriously, guys. This isn't political. This is real. Okay, so he does that in every speech. I love it every time. But now the whisper, though, has gotten to such a low decibel level that it's like having the opposite effect. Instead of drawing you in, like, oh, I missed it. What did he say, right? Like, hold on, I'm listening, right? And so you're like, what did he say? Okay. And then, like, rhetorically, he's like, the anti-Asian crime is bad. Trump was like, it's the China virus. The Chinese did it, right? He said, oh, look, the most important thing is we got to listen to science, right? Trump would come in and be like, no one knows science better than I do. I am probably immune. I don't know. I'm just guessing here. Okay, but don't listen to the scientists. Because remember, I know better than the scientists. No one knows better.
No. Hydroxychloroquine. Try it. I'll never forget that line.
Yeah.
Remember when he was trying to slang hydroxychloroquine as a.
Of course. Yeah. Because Laura was invested in it or something. I don't know, right? But he was like, just try it. What could it? It couldn't hurt you. Actually, it could. And then a couple died and et cetera. But why not? Was his approach. The president of the United States would come on national TV and go, I don't know, but why not? Right? And of course, famously said, maybe you should inject yourself with bleach. Okay. And I love when he looked at the doctor too, and he was like, and the doctor's like, all right. Now, so look, onto the substance of the speech. The main reason that he was supposed to sign the America Rescue Plan tomorrow, but he said at the last second, no, I'm signing it today, and he signed it. Why? Because he was going to give a speech, and he wanted to be able to say, I signed it earlier today, And then the main reason for the speech is to lay out the timeline, okay? And of course, to do some bragging. We passed this bill that's really important to you guys. I actually think he didn't do a good enough job of bragging. We'll come back to that. But say, by May 1st, you'll all be eligible to get the vaccine. So when I saw that he was gonna say that before the speech, I got excited. I was like, it'd be great if I could guarantee that I'm gonna get the vaccine before May 1st. But then he clarified in the speech, you'll be eligible to get it by May 1st. So at a minimum, you'll be on a list. Yeah, not quite the same thing, right? And then he said, we hope by 4th of July, you'll all be able to get together and barbecues and stuff. I mean, I would hope so. 4th of July is like really far in the distance. And then he's like, still don't do the large gatherings and stuff. Guys, look, I've said this to you before. Once you're double vaccinated, the science shows you're all right. Beyond that, if you're still not getting together with loved ones, you're doing it wrong. It's not pro-science, it's anti-science. You're fine once you got double vaccinated. So then you wait 2 weeks, you're definitely fine. It's not to say that you can't get COVID, it's not to say you can't get anything. But the probability is so low at that point, it doesn't make sense to isolate yourself. So I hope to God we're almost completely done by 4th of July. But he was still talking about don't get together in large gatherings, etc. One last fact here that matters. He said, when we came in, we're doing a million a day, and I promised you a million vaccinations a day, and now we're up to 2 million. I'm glad we're up to 2 million. That's real, right? But the million, Trump was also doing a million. So let's keep it real. Our job is to be honest with you guys. Like Biden told that story of the woman he met in Philadelphia as if it was like, all standard politicians do like personal anecdotes, and 9 out of 10 times they're totally irrelevant. And this was a perfect example. I met a woman in Philly. Okay, what did she say to you? She said, just tell me the truth. We all say that. But to a politician, that's like, oh, the truth. Well, I had not thought of that. So because of the woman in Philly, I'm telling you the truth. All right. So look, he's picked up the pace of the vaccinations the government has. So that's good. But don't bother coming telling me that 1 million vaccines a day is a big deal when it wasn't a big deal. That's what Trump was doing. Okay, I've got more to say, but Anna, thoughts?
Well, so let me start off. Let me do the sandwich method, okay? Since he gave a Toastmasters-like speech, I'll give a Toastmasters-like critique. Starting with some positive, mixed in with negative, and end with positive. So the positive thing is, he finally got the hang of messaging in regard to coronavirus vaccines, because everything that we've gotten from the CDC, all of the messaging we've gotten from the federal government in regard to encouraging people to get the vaccine, I think was misguided, because they wouldn't communicate the incentives for getting the vaccine. And the incentive is, when you get the vaccine, you've gotten both doses, both shots, it's been 2 weeks. You can see people, like you can hang out with loved ones, and that's a giant incentive. In Israel, for instance, they have this campaign called Get a Shot, Take a Shot, to encourage young people to get vaccinated, because they weren't interested, right? Like they thought, well, I'm young, it's unlikely that coronavirus is gonna harm me or kill me. So as a result, why am I gonna spend my time, getting this vaccine? And the point that the Israeli government was trying to make here was, you wanna enjoy that sweet, sweet nightlife, don't you, right? Mm-hmm. And so in America, we weren't getting that kind of messaging. It was actually very different. It was, no, you must get the vaccine. And then after you get the vaccine, double mask, and then you're gonna quarantine for 6 more months. And it was, obviously, that's hyperbole, I'm exaggerating. But you catch my drift, right? At some point, and we haven't gotten to this point yet, which is why maybe my commentary sounds nonsensical, but at some point we're gonna get to this uncomfortable area where people aren't like, jumping on top of each other trying to get this vaccine. The people who desperately want to get the vaccine will have been vaccinated. And then it's all about persuading those who maybe bought into the nonsense about the vaccine by conspiracy theorists. We need to persuade them that A, the vaccine is safe, and B, there are good things to follow for you personally once you get that vaccine. I mean, aside from keeping you alive and all that. So yeah. I think that he did that really well in the speech.
Yeah, and I don't think what you said is hyperbole. My dad is double vaccinated, he's 83 years old, he just got finished, and he's still worried about hugging the kids. Why? Because the media is pounding it into everybody's head. Like, the vaccinations don't matter, you still need to do all the same precautions. No, the point of the vaccinations is that it does matter and you don't have to do that. So I'm not saying go nuts and go in the middle of a crowd of 80,000 people and start spitting everywhere. Right? But at the same time, hug your grandkids. Yes, that's what. Look, I like Israel's policy. I'm going to take a preemptive shot later today. Okay, even though I didn't even get a shot. And so let's just note one last thing before I get say the probably the most important part of this is just the goofy stuff. Like. Whenever Biden says, you know, we need to get the shots in arms, or a lot of people say that, I always feel like
stop using that. No, it's not just goofy, it's uncomfortable. Like, that in my, like, for people like me, that dissuades me from what. Obviously, I'm gonna get the vaccine once I can, but I don't like hearing it framed that way. It's weird, it sounds painful. Stop saying that. Like,
yeah, you remember how
Anna, shots in arms is not a good way of describing getting vaccinated. Just not.
Yeah, I don't know if you were on that show, but we discussed how Frank Luntz did a focus group of Republicans. He's the top Republican pollster, and they learned how to try to get Republicans to take the shot. And apparently there's two different ways of referring to it. One is just getting vaccinated, and that works better. But apparently, I didn't know this, a lot of people in the country are calling it the jab. And it was not surprising that Luntz was like, yeah, that did not poll well. People do not want to get jabbed.
Who calls it that? I haven't heard that before.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a rural thing, I don't know if it's a Republican thing, but no, don't call it the jab. That sounds disastrous. Right? Yeah. There's a lot of things that, you know, and that one's not on Biden at all. But like, and this is, I know I'm being silly, and these are normal things, but his slogans suck, right? Build back better, world's worst slogan. Guaranteed Biden picked it, and it was too awkward to say, like, Mr. Vice President, it doesn't really roll off the tongue. It does. We build back better. Nah, it's going in a lot of different directions, right? When he kept referring tonight to the second gentleman, I know that's a thing now, right? But it just, I don't know, it sounds so funny. And the second gentleman got the jab.
Wait, what is that? I don't really know what he meant there. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, wait, that's, yeah. Anna, that's why I wanted to clarify. I'm not sure everybody knows. That's Kamala Harris's husband, because he's the first ever not lady but gentleman in that role. And so they didn't know what to call him, and they landed on the second gentleman.
Why don't they just call him Bob? Like, what's his name?
Just call him by his name. It's just so awkward. Okay, and then the second gentleman got a shot in the arm, and he built back better after that.
Okay. Look, maybe it's just a personal preference, but if I were Kamala Harris's husband, I would not like being referred to as the second gentleman. No, like, it sounds not. Pretty bad.
The first thing everybody thinks is, who's the first gentleman? Look, if my wife became vice president, I would be so immensely proud of her and me for marrying her that I, like, you couldn't fit my pride in a room or in a house or in the White House, right? But it would all be ruined the minute someone called me the second gentleman. Okay. Anyways, totally. Super random fun point. Okay, I got more where that came from in terms of like goofy words that they use. By the way, I just want to say before the last point, thank you to all of our members. That's why we can do extra coverage like this. Normally, we'd be doing the post game for the members, but we're doing this because it's such an important moment, right? So tyt.com/join to become a member. If you're watching on YouTube, you can just hit the join button below. And on Twitch, it's free if you have Amazon Prime. So twitch.tv/tyt. All right, so last thing is, Anna, the most important part in this incredibly boring but sane, like wonderfully sane speech. He didn't say anything crazy. Everything he said was generally true, etc. Was the bottom line. Look, passing the relief bill is super important. And the best point he made about that was, if you're a family of four and you're under the cap, which is, you know, $150,000, and you're not at all phased out. You start getting phased out after 150, and you get phased out completely at 160 if you're a couple, right? But basically, a family of four, you're gonna get $5,600. That's a lot of money. That's amazing, and that's a majority of the country. That's great politics, and you should remind people of that. And it's also good policy. I mean, that almost never happens in Washington. Good policy and good politics. So I love that he pointed that out. So that's half the results. The other half is, are they just gonna be able to deliver on execution of the vaccine? Because I want the vaccine. I want to go back and be able to enjoy life and be with my family and travel and know all the things that we used to do. So if they deliver the vaccine in good time, great. Then they did a wonderful job. We elected them largely for competence, not because we thought they were gonna do amazing progressive stuff, but they weren't gonna burn the country down. They weren't gonna end democracy, and they were going to be competent. That was their core promise. So that's what they have to deliver on now. If people don't get the vaccines in time, they're going to be furious. If they do, then mission accomplished.
Yeah, so I have one critique that I wanted to share. And I'm sure that it didn't even register with most people, but I guess I was sensitive to it because I know that some countries that aren't as fortunate as wealthy developed countries like ours have had a difficult time getting the vaccine. And so I think that his line that the United States is outpacing the rest of the world with vaccinations, first of all, I don't know if that's true. I would want to fact check that. Secondly, just taking it at face value, I don't really think that's something to be bragging about. I mean, we shouldn't be competing with other countries in regard to vaccinating. We should be working with other countries to ensure that as many people get vaccinated as possible, because this is clearly a airborne, easily transmittable virus. It did not, well, obviously right now, the thinking is that it did not originate in the United States. I don't want to get into all of that for obvious reasons. But my point here is that this virus spread globally, right? So it's not like we can protect ourselves with our borders by ensuring that we all get vaccinated and who cares about the rest of the world. No, we should be working. First of all, the fact that the vaccines are under patent is ridiculous. Like that blows my mind. Like it just shows you how in like commodifying pharmaceuticals and vaccines and things that like keep people alive just doesn't make sense. And it especially doesn't make sense when it comes to a pandemic with an airborne virus that easily infects people. Like it's stupid. So I hated that line. I wish he didn't include it. Maybe I'm making a big deal out of a small thing, but it's not a small thing. I think that it's really a tragedy that certain countries that aren't as developed as the United States or the Western countries have to suffer the consequences of this capitalistic health infrastructure that's been absolutely devastating. It's dumb, and we shouldn't be bragging about it.
Yeah, so I have a critique too, but I want to read some of the viewer comments that lead up to my critique. First of all, on YouTube Super Chat, Super Greggy Pants, fun name, wrote, "Jake, I might not be able to get my vaccine by May 1st, but at least know when I can get in line. It's a huge relief compared to being in the dark on my status just yesterday." So that's someone saying, "Hey, Jake, I'm more relieved about that than you are." And I wanted to share that with you guys because we do the show together, okay? Captain Cornball agreed about the sanity parts. This is in our member section, tyt.com/join. "It's kind of weird watching a presidential speech without any verbal hand grenades in it. The speech is a cup of cocoa and a warm blankie." Yes, if I hear the Secret Service name for Biden is warm blankie. So I think you got it. By the way, that not actual Secret Service name. All right. But Baker Brigade gets, I'm sorry, Colorado Blue Blazer Regular gets to what I was gonna say. He says, "No, you Republican apologist. It was not the House and Senate that passed the relief bill. It was the Democrats. Put the credit where it belongs, not with a single Republican." So Biden, kind of quarter did the job here tonight. So as I said earlier, coming out and pointing out the $5,600 checks you're about to get if you're a family of four, great, right? But he should have done a lot more of that. The one thing that Trump did right, so the thing that he would do wrong is what Captain Cornball is talking about. He'd come on and he'd be like, it's the Chinese's fault. I'm the only one who could fix it. But you shouldn't even actually wear a mask, whatever, okay? Just get the bleach and rub it on your face. All right, we're thrilled that we don't have a moron doing that, doing a circus show in the middle of a very serious pandemic. But the one thing Trump did do right was he would constantly brag. And you say, wait a minute, I don't like people who brag. Why are you saying that that's the right thing to do? In politics, if you do not constantly repeat your message, it will not get through to people. Not everyone is as politically aware as you are if you're watching this video. The more you repeat it, the more it gets to people. A higher percentage of people will hear it. In fact, earlier in today's program on the Young Turks, we talked about how the number one news story that Republicans know about right now is not related to coronavirus or anything serious or important or the bill. It's Dr. Seuss. Why? Because every Republican in the country is repeating talking points about Dr. Seuss. Now, of course, they're all lies, but that's the difference part of it. So when Biden gets out here, it's imperative that he not be so damn classy, that he's got to come out and he could say it in a fine way. He doesn't have to say it in a lunatic way like Trump does, right? But say, hey, look, guys, I got to be honest with you. I wanted bipartisanship and I tried really, really hard. We even compromised on some portions of the bill that I'm not sure we should have compromised on because I really liked the original bill as written by Democrats. But the Republicans wouldn't give us any votes. This bill that is going to get you so much help. When you get that help, understand that your vote mattered. You voted for us and we got you the help. And every single Republican said, no, we do not want the American people to have this help. So I got a level with you. That lady in Philadelphia told me to tell you the truth, and that is the truth. Zero Republican votes. Every single one of them did not want you to get these checks. They did not want you to get any of this assistance. But don't worry, you did the right thing. You elected me, you elected us, and we delivered for you. See, if you pound that home, then people begin to wonder, wait, why did zero Republicans vote for it? In fact, this is what drives me nuts about the Democrats. Interesting Freudian slip there. Why don't you make your case? So one thing that should have been in tonight's speeches, if you should have done the Biden lean in on this. Guys, I gotta tell you, I don't want this to be political, and I don't think it is political. You have to lower your voice when you do the Biden lean, okay? But 75% of the country, you all out there, you wanted this bill. And 59% of Republican voters wanted it. But every Republican voted no anyway.
I'm not a whisperer, so I'm gonna stop that. But basically to say, why did all of your Republican legislators vote against your own interest? If you're a Republican voter, you should ask them that. It's a fair question. It's a fair question. Why do you constantly vote against us? But don't worry, I told you the help was coming and now it has arrived. So sometimes you need to speak up for yourself, and that's what Joe Biden has an issue with.
Joe Biden doesn't frame things that way because Republicans are his homies. I mean, he campaigned on that. He continues to use that talking point about the importance of bipartisanship and unity. So he's not gonna engage in braggy talk about how Democrats did this, but Republicans did that. He's just not gonna do it. But I agree with you. I mean, I think that there's certainly a messaging problem on behalf of the Democratic Party overall. And Biden takes it to a new extreme, or I don't know, maybe a continuing extreme of trying to do this when they go low, we go high, narrative, right? And it doesn't work. You need to let the American people know how it is that you're different from your political opponents. And to be sure, the Republican Party, especially after the way they handled the coronavirus relief package, are Biden's political opponents. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Tucker Carlson, his coverage, by the way, I'm seeing on Twitter, the lower third on his segment covering this speech is Biden failed to address scandals during address.
What?
What scandal? What scandals? What are you talking about?
I almost
you want to talk about scandals? Scandals?
What scandals?
Scandals. He's talking about scandals.
We were a little diamond in silk there, let's be honest. Yeah, totally. Okay. Scandals? What scandals? I don't know what scandals you're talking about. Okay, anyways, so seriously, I literally have no idea what he's talking about. The only thing I can think of if I stretch is Cuomo, but that doesn't have anything to do with Biden. Like, Biden be lucky to have a scandal. He's mainly just boring us to tears. Let's keep it real.
No, I know. And it's a good thing. It's a good thing. It's like, I feel guilty saying that he's boring, but I know it's a good thing. But come on, he's boring.
Like, but as we explained here, Anna, it's half good, right? It's not fully good. Like, it's good that it's not insane. It's not good if you're not making your case. And, you know, look, honestly, last thing I'll say on that is that as you've heard me say many times, NPR taught a generation of Democrats a whisper, or several generations. And you feel better about yourself because people don't like braggarts, right? But in politics, bragging isn't just puffery. It's really important to winning. And if you don't win, then the bad guys win, and then they have horrible policies. They don't help us at all, and all they do is pass tax cuts for the rich. So it's even if it makes you uncomfortable, if you're a Democratic politician, especially a progressive, it is incumbent upon you to be loud and yes, to brag, to say we are for this and they are not, and make those positions clear. Look, I'll do an aside here. Jayapal apparently today, I just saw the headline, just to be fair, okay? I haven't had a chance to read the whole thing. She's the Progressive Caucus chair. She says she talked to Biden and he assures her that they're going to do minimum wage. That doesn't mean anything. He assured us he was gonna do minimum wage in this bill. He assured us he was gonna do minimum $15 minimum wage. And I get, look, a stone cold guarantee. If they go to do minimum wage, by the way, it's because of the pressure that you guys are putting on and all progressives are putting on. Because normally how things would work is, oh, we were just kidding. We said we were gonna do minimum wage, but we're not going to. And then the press will be like, oh, congratulations on bipartisanship, and everybody will move on. Now progressives are strong enough, we're like, no, we're not moving on. No, you said minimum wage, and if you don't do it, you're a goddamn liar, right? Oh, you guys are so bad, you're okay, fine, but there's pressure. Yes, that's how politics works. But now what I'm telling you is, I guarantee you that if they go back to the minimum wage, they'll immediately start talking about $11. They're not gonna get any Republican votes on it no matter what, right? And again, they'll pretend to be negotiating with Republicans, and then Manchin will start to make demands and say he'll hold up the bill and all this stuff. And then progressives, if things hold, will make no demands. And they'll say, oh no, it's okay, Biden assured us. No, I don't give a damn about his assurances. I'm tired of his assurances. So progressives, be loud in a respectful way and not an insane way, but also be strategic and make demands. Power concedes nothing without a demand. Okay, back to this particular speech. Before we run out of time, coincidentally, Anna, LAUSD, I assume coincidentally, put out a statement just last night saying that the schools are going to open back up in LA. Okay, so the public school, my kids in a public school, they're both in public school right now, and so mid-April they're opening back up. And
wow, mid-April—that's so soon. Wow.
Yeah, it's hybrid. You could choose not to go, but I think we're gonna send the kids because my parents are vaccinated. That's the most important thing. And so I'm the only one left unvaccinated. The kids are, of course, also unvaccinated, but it's okay. And then just now I got an email from my medical provider saying, okay, you can get in line. So that was quick. You know, it's probably not probably definitely a coincidence because Biden didn't announce that he was doing this speech until today. So there's no way my medical provider knew that, planned the email and sent it. Although of course it was Fox News. Aha! By the way, and if they did coordinate and now I can get in line, great. That means they're really good at organizing.
By the way, I love that this barely got any attention. So I feel a little guilty bringing it up now, but it made me smile this morning that in response to Biden's upcoming speech, Donald Trump released a statement about like, don't forget all the things that I did, like trying to take credit
for
his handling of Corona. It's so sad and I love it. I love it. It's so good.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
And first of all, I love you loving it. Like your zest for his patheticness is awesome, and I share it. There's nothing more wonderfully pathetic than "Don't forget about me." And remember, I could have done the public vaccine, but I got vaccinated to make sure I was safe. But I didn't tell you guys about it because I didn't want you to be safe, because I think it helps me politically. So don't forget about me. Okay. All right. One last point about the speech. Look, and I think we struggle with this all the time. Maybe we'll talk more about it in the post game too. We're gonna do a post game in just a couple of minutes, guys. TYT.com/join if you're watching anywhere, that's how you sign up through our website. You get all of our post games and all of our videos, and you help support bring change to the world. And that, does that make you a hero? Not, I guess it does. I really think it does. Okay, if you're on YouTube, you just click the join button below. It's super simple. Anyway, for the earnest crowd, which is almost all Democrats, when Biden gives an earnest speech like this, they eat it up. I mean, I guarantee you, a lot of people I know that are in that group of folks, they showed up with to the speech with a bib and a spoon, and they're like, yummy, 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 right? And so when we criticize, even if it's jokingly, about the anecdote in Philly, and about, hey, you know what, you can't really brag about a million shots a day, that's what Trump was doing, and we criticize a slogan or we call him out on minimum wage, that class of Democrats gets genuinely super mad at us. And built into that assumption is the media is supposed to be biased in favor of the Democratic establishment. Otherwise, why get mad at us? That's a kind of a weird thing, right? We're commenting on the speech. We could have any opinion we like. No, the assumption is the media must help Democrats, and specifically Democratic leadership. And they believe that with all their fiber in their being, okay? And then the other school of thought is, and this is true of a lot of young progressives. You and I were talking about that off air. People are like, look, I don't care what you think we're supposed to do. I don't care. No. We're gonna give him credit where he deserves. He talked about science, he was right. He had facts, that was great. He was sane, lovely, right? And we're gonna call out things that just aren't true. And we're not gonna have this fawning reverence for a whispered speech. He should have been louder, right? And so that's the dynamic that I think no one's really grappled with. The older generations assume it. And they hate it when anyone doesn't follow along. And the younger generations assume the opposite and think that the boomers are super weird for weirdly like saying things that are obviously not true. Like, oh man, that speech wasn't, you can't say it was boring, that's unacceptable. Yeah, whatever, dude, it was.
No, it was super boring. But Biden's never even been known to be a great charismatic speaker, right? That's always been a critique toward him. So, I mean, if people want to get their feelings hurt over that, I guess they can get their feelings hurt. I'm not going to lie and say that speech was like riveting when it wasn't. The information was good. He didn't tell us to inject ourselves with disinfectant. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm happy with how it went. It is what it is.
That's it. Okay. Young Turks, hashtag it is what it is. All right, in the short time we have left, I want to give you guys a couple of shout outs here. Kari Safari, in fact, I just want to, it's important to answer this question. Kari Safari has been with us for 2 months on Twitch, twitch.tv/TYT, and saying, Cenk, even after being vaccinated, you can still carry it around to others, right? No, not necessarily. If I thought that, then I would give you different advice. Pretty much the only study. that I've
read
seen.
Read the new CDC guidelines, because the CDC has updated its guidelines to reflect what is and is not safe after you get vaccinated with the second dose and you wait 2 weeks. At that point, you can actually get together with other non-vaccinated people without a mask, and it's considered safe. But please read the CDC guidelines, because it's not us sharing our opinion. What the hell do I know? Like, I'm not a health expert. Cenk's not a health expert. We're just giving you what we know based on the CDC guidelines.
Well, if you've ever seen me in person, you'll know I'm not a health expert. In fact, in the post game for the members, we're gonna totally lighten it up. And I have one other thing to say about this that's important substantive. But I also wanna talk about, so once somebody called me fat, and that was a mistake, and I want to tell you what I did in return. I think you guys are going to like that story. So hit the join button below to be a member on YouTube and tyt.com/join everywhere else. Okay, so guys, it's the CDC updated it because they were being overly cautious. And the one major study I've seen comes out of Israel saying, no, you can't. It's not easy to transmit it once you've gotten vaccinated. So stay safe, but stay reasonable. All right, members, we'll be right back. All right, we're back on the post game. I'm gonna read a couple of comments and work off that, and then I'll get to the story, I promised. The progressive linguist wrote in our super chat, Florida has never closed schools. Us teachers down here are so sick of hearing about reopening when we've been in person since August and nobody cares. You know, that's the thing, man. Now the blue states and red states are so different that we really do live in two different Americas. Here in California, it's the opposite. The teachers union is super strong. And so they delayed and delayed and delayed, arguably past reason. Okay. Whereas in Florida, they're like, back to the mines. We don't care about you at all.
So I'm so fascinated with her perspective. And I would love to know what the experience of teachers in Florida has been, right? Because the teachers in Los Angeles and California have had reservations because honestly, they had pretty reasonable requests. Like they want the filters put in the classrooms. And I forget, it was one other thing that they were requesting. But you know, of course, like the teachers don't wanna get sick. Like kids can get COVID, they're likely to survive, but they can still transmit that to the teachers. So I'm curious if the teachers have had an easy time, you know, continuing instruction. I suspect that DeSantis is hiding actual coronavirus numbers from his state, but I don't know for sure. So I would love to hear her perspective. So if she could follow up on that, it would be really helpful.
Yeah, so I don't know if she's still watching. I don't know if she's a member, but yeah, that would definitely be helpful overall. All right, let me keep going because this is a short post game and Jordan Yule's up next. Rizelle B wrote in, but Biden promised to never embarrass the Republicans, so that message will probably never be given by him. I know, it's such a stupid promise. It's a selfish promise. It's saying, I might help my political career to be viewed as bipartisan, so I'll never make the Democratic case against Republicans. That way, other Democrats will lose. Honestly, that's exactly what Obama did. That's why they lost 1,000 seats when Obama was president, because it's super selfish. I'm just keeping it real. All right, then on the lighter side.
It is a winning strategy to compromise with the losers of the election. I mean, it'll seal the deal for your political future.
Look, guys, I keep telling you about Nina Turner, and so it's partly because I can see the future, right? And I can't believe that others can't see it, right? So Nina is the one. I'm so positive. If she doesn't do it, like I might even just stop the activist part and just do the news and be depressed the rest of my life. But like Nina is so strong. I just don't think she's gonna get gaslit. I just don't. And I was hopeful that many rounds of progressives would not get gaslit in Washington. I tried to tell them, don't get gaslit. This is what's gonna happen. And then they get gaslit. They get gaslit every time, right? And so don't get me wrong, it's deeply frustrating. But I think Nina is gonna change the whole dynamic because they can't bulldoze her. You can't bulldoze a bulldozer. So once she starts leading, everybody else is going to be, I'm being honest here, guys, embarrassed into action. What are they gonna do? Nina Turner saying, okay, I'm fighting for minimum wage. The rest of them are gonna go, we're not. Have at it, Hoss. You're gonna look ridiculous. And so, and that's helpful to politics. So, and the reason I'm bringing that up in this context is because why do I think Nina Turner is so great? There's a couple of different reasons, but the main one I'm telling you about here is she loudly makes our case to the point where you can't ignore her. And our case is the best case. We have all the facts on our side, but we have nothing but whispers. Look, it's not fair. The AOCs of the world and the Rashida Tlaib, et cetera, did a great job in making a portion of our case. It's just that they run into the wall when they have to challenge their own Democratic colleagues. That is where they get gaslit into oblivion and then stop making the case and stop making the case for action. Oh my God, I wouldn't want to offend anybody's feelings in Washington. You know what I think about the feelings in Washington. Okay, so all right, on to lighter stuff. Nutritionist Liz wrote in, my friends in England call it a jab. I didn't know that. First of all, of course, I do declare. And I love all the English words. Taking a leaf later to the, wait, what's, controversy is my second favorite. I'm gonna try to get my favorite right. It'd be ironic if I don't. Garage. Okay.
No. My favorite one, and I didn't even realize it was my favorite until the Harry and Meghan Markle interview. Barrage.
Barrage. Oh, barrage. A barrage. Weeks against them, for example.
I love it. Oh, so much.
I didn't hear that. It's
so good.
Yeah.
So yeah. Good.
You know, honestly, we've had a barrage of controversies here at TYT.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's such a more sophisticated way of speaking. So I'm now gonna say barrage instead of barrage. It just sounds better.
It's a way more fun. But mm-hmm. I mainly read that because I wanted to tell you, so I'm starting to, last month or two, I've started to have fantasies of the outside world. Cause I used to travel nonstop, right? I would take two trips a month easy. For business reasons. And now I haven't taken a trip, gotten on an airplane in 16 months, which is just unbelievable, right? So I'm starting to fantasize about the rest of the world. Of course, if you guys know me at all, if you've been around for a while, the first place, of course, I think of is Miami. Like, oh, you know, there's that movie, One Night in Miami. I'm like, I feel like it's teasing me. Just give me one more night in Miami, okay? Where we're just chilling out and having fun and no stress. Because I associate Miami with no work, no stress. That's why I care. I'm the only person who goes to Miami and never goes to a club, okay?
I just
look at the water and the clouds and it gets so purple at sunset. And even before the days I used to get high, that I would get high on that because I'm that corny, right? So anyways, but the second place for whatever reason that keeps popping in my head is London. It's kind of random. I don't go to London that often. I've gone like twice in my life, right? But I keep dreaming about going back to London and how fun that would be. So, I mean, if only I can get a jab. I can go and take a lift to a garage in London.
Yeah, London's cool. I've been thinking about not London specifically, but Europe overall. Like, I love European countries, the architecture, the food, the culture, the cobblestone roads. Like, I miss, like, Europe doesn't feel anything like the United States, and I think that's the reason why I like it.
I want to say yes. Okay, but look, I'll even admit to missing France and Paris. I mean, that's very un-Jenkian,
Come on, though. Come on. You know what I was thinking about the other day, Cenk? It's so crazy. So we went to Cannes years and years ago for some conference. I can't even, like, it feels like a dream that we went to Cannes for a conference, right? Because it was such a great trip. And I remember the delicious flaky pastries with the so cafe au lait. Oh, so good. I miss it. It was the good days.
Cafe au lait, au lait, au lait, au lait. Look, we went because we were under the mistaken assumption that we had a shot at getting, well, first of all, we got invited so by YouTube. So a big portion of the trip was paid for. Classic TYT thing, right? And then whatever little was left over, we thought, well, maybe we could sell a show internationally and then make a lot of money. Okay, that didn't happen, but delicious flaky pastries did happen. Best Armenian restaurant I've ever eaten at, maybe the best Turkish restaurant I've ever eaten at is an Armenian restaurant at Cannes. So for word to the wise, if you're ever lucky enough to get out there. Okay, anyways, all right, so I promised you a story before we run out of time, I gotta tell you, okay? So this is a long time ago, probably a little post high school. We're playing tennis at my old high school, East Brunswick High, right? And at the time, am I overweight? I guess, no, I was, but not even at anywhere near this level, right? But I had a gut, right? So I've had that for a long time. So it's relevant to the story, that's why I'm telling you. So we're playing tennis with friends, and then there's a tennis instructor next to us taking up like three different courts. That's okay, he's teaching kids, and I'm sure he's got a permit, nothing wrong with that. But for whatever reason, he was a cranky dick, right? And he just kept like yelling at us for no reason. Like their balls would come over to our court all the time. We'd politely hit him back. That's tennis etiquette, right? What little I know of tennis etiquette. And then, but whenever we hit a ball over there, he's like, what the hell, man, guys, go cut it out. You guys don't know how to play or whatever, right? Like, okay, rando hostile guy, just calm down, right? And you know me, I'm not gonna stand for that. So I don't remember how, I don't remember this portion of the story. But you know, I snap back at him. But you know, the way that I do, like sarcastic and in a way that gets under his skin. So so then he takes it over the top and he goes, again, I don't remember the exact quote, but he called me fat. And he's like, listen, fat guy, okay, you take your balls and go somewhere else, or whatever the hell he said. Now, you get this guy, middle-aged, a gigantic pot belly, okay, makes me look svelte, okay. So I'm like, wait. Then I was having fun. I was like, wait. Everybody stop. Did you just call me fat? Okay. And I went next to him. I got down low next to his belly, and I started pointing at it. Okay. And it's this giant belly, right? And I'm pointing at it. Did you just call me fat? Did this guy just call me fat? And he's like, now he's losing his mind. And I'm walking around and I'm not touching him, okay? But I'm like, this guy just called someone fat. This guy, okay? Because I'm not playing, okay? You're gonna call me fat, it's true, right? I'm not bothered by it. I earned it. You have any idea the kind of fun I had eating my way to this, okay? I'm gonna get better, okay? But that guy, you can call me fat, that guy can't call me fat. So I was reminded of that from that pastor story today, where he's like, got this giant gut, right? And he's wearing like sloppy clothes and stuff. And he's like, oh, then the women, and they get married and they get fat and they wear sweatpants. It's not acceptable. You gotta be hot for me. If I was in that crowd, and I, woman or not, I would have gotten up on that stage and like pointed at his belly and be like, this guy's calling you fat. This guy.
Yeah. Man, that guy was gross. Not because of his physical appearance, but like what he was saying. And one of our viewers tweeted about how all I'm hearing right now is a guy telling himself all sorts of excuses after his wife cheated on him, which might be true. Like it seemed like he had been through some stuff. It seemed like he had been through some stuff. But also like, yeah, the double standard thing really bothers me. And I think the reason why is, yes, it's gross on its own, but also It's that kind of thinking is very dominant among old school Armenians, at least in Los Angeles. I can't make blanket statements about Armenians around the world, but like you'll see these insanely gorgeous, like beautiful Armenian girls, right? And they put themselves through torture, like to look perfect. And then their husbands like don't care, don't eat well, don't take care of themselves, drinking like crazy. And they think like, and by the way, like for a very long time in Los Angeles, like the culture in our like among Armenians has been, you don't really have a choice. Like you're gonna marry an Armenian, right? So Armenian women had been like terrorized by their families if they ever even considered marrying outside of their, you know, culture, their nationality, whatever. And so Armenian guys are like, yeah, they're gonna marry us anyway. Let's eat those sausages. Let's drink that beer. Let's chill. And no, that's not okay. Okay, so yeah. You know, I'm happy to be one of the people who broke those rules because those double standards are the sense of entitlement. I mean, you hit the nail on the head when we covered the story in the main show. If you're gonna have those kinds of expectations of your partner, you got to have a moment of reflection and take a good hard look at yourself as well. You know, it goes both ways.
Yeah, that's what guys look. A part of being progressive is ignoring the old bullshit rules, right?
Yes.
Like, and I used to get the same pressure. We all did. And you know, oh, you got to marry Turkish. You got to marry Turkish. And when you know friends of the family or family members, not I don't mean my direct family, but you know, uncles and aunts are notorious for this, right? You got to marry Turkish. You got to marry Turkish. Oh, it's a betrayal. I'm like, no, you have to marry Turkish. I don't have to marry Turkish. You do you, and that's even before I met you, Anna, but you do you, boo.
Yeah.
Okay, I probably left out the boo part that you added that to my vocabulary, but and I'll do me. And like, you know, and these are family friends that are in America. Like, you guys brought us to America, well, by the way, where there are almost no Turks. So at least in Glendale, there's a billion Armenians, right? There's like no Turks in the country. And they're like, okay, you have to marry Turks. So I have like three girls to choose from in the whole country. They're like, oh, well, you could go back and find a girl in Turkey. I'm like, yeah. What is this, shopping? Like,
I know. It's so ridiculous.
No, I'm like, listen, I love your brothers and sisters. And I do. They're good people. And I love our family friends are just wonderful people. It's just old way of thinking. And so
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like taking you to a buffet and telling you like you can only eat the garbanzo beans from the salad bar. Like, no, I don't want the garbanzo beans. Maybe I want to have a taste of chocolate cake. Maybe I want some refried beans. Like, let me do what I want to do. Leave me alone. Okay, don't bring me to the buffet and tell me I can't have what I want.
Okay, here's what you don't want to do. Bring me to a buffet and tell me I can't have it. Okay, hold on. Last two things here, because we got to do a deep dive. You guys got to do a deep dive. Jordan Yule's about to do a deep dive. Okay, so there was this one obnoxious guy though, and I know he was obnoxious among my dad's friends because, and you're gonna be shocked by this, but when I was a kid, when I was younger, for a long time, all the way till probably like 25 or so, I was very quiet around family. I was the quiet guy. Okay, so but I remember this one uncle talking about how the Jews control Hollywood. And he just kept going on and on and on. And it was just driving me nuts, right? One, because of the irrationality of it and how stupid it is. And two, because half my friends are Jewish. So fuck off, dude, right? You're talking about my friends and you're full of shit and I know it, right? And so he kept going on until I said, okay, that's it. I said, hey, listen, can I ask you something? Your son, I was thinking of talking him into going to Hollywood with me and writing scripts and maybe becoming a director or an actor, right? And he's like, what? Why? I'm like, well, I mean, it sounded like you wanted Muslims to be part of Hollywood because you say the Jews control it. So obviously your kids should get into Hollywood, right? And help take it over. And he's like, no, that is shame. They should be doctor or lawyer or businessman, right? Or engineer. I said, all right, so then why are you talking about other people controlling Hollywood if you think that it's shameful to work in Hollywood? Why don't you shut up about it? Okay, so Now, everybody was blown away because all the elders think I'm the quiet, respectful guy. And they're like, whoa, what the fuck was that? Jake, just the quiet guy just nuked that uncle. Goddamn right. You know, shut your mouth about stupid bigotry and then turn around and put pressure on your kids to conform, right? Mm-hmm. So it pissed me off in both directions. Okay, yeah. That was your rando story on that.
Okay. No, I love it. I love it. Because you have to, I think you have to challenge narratives and like, I mean, in this case, it was just stupidity, right? Like an ignorance. But just going back to culture and norms, like for me, it was just this realization that I'm in this country. I have opportunities that my family literally left their like homeland for. And so why am I not going to take advantage of those opportunities? And that obviously applies to more than just economic opportunities. It applies to cultural opportunities as well. The ability to, you know, break away from the types of norms that, because look, Armenians are like pretty deeply conservative. At least when I was growing up, that was the case. And the norms, of course, like made women feel like they're second class citizens. And I'm like, no, I'm not a second class citizen. I'm super smart, super capable. I know that sounds really cocky to say, but it's true. Like I know that I can do more than what the Armenian cultural norms indicate I'm supposed to do. And you only have this one life to live, right? So are you just gonna like go with the flow and do things that you don't actually agree with or like just to make your family happy? Or are you gonna live your life the way that you choose to live it in a way that makes you happy? Yeah, your family might get mad at you for a month max. They'll get over it. And my family did too. They got over it. I broke every norm and there were moments that were painful. But guess what? My parents love me. And for the family members, the extended family members who don't like that I'm breaking the norms and they have something negative to say, well, then you can piss off. I'm in America. I was born in America. I'm gonna live my life as an American. I'm proud of my Armenian heritage, but I don't live in Armenia and I don't need to abide by any norms coming from, you know, old school culture, period.
Yeah. So we'll end on this. You said, you know, sorry, but this, you know, I'm confident enough to say the positive things you said about yourself. You shouldn't say sorry. And I don't mean you, Anna. I mean you guys in the audience. Guys, this drives me crazy. And this is gonna be the latter end of my career. That's why we did that fun, silly Dr. Jenk show. There's nothing wrong with loving yourself. And all of society tells you, don't do it. Don't do it. It deeply offends everyone else if you love yourself. Oh, well, who do you think you are? Okay. I don't know. I think I'm a pretty good guy and I have these attributes and I think, you know, and I have these weaknesses. I'm aware of them. So I'm not overconfident. I'm not cocky and I'm not saying anything about you. I'm just saying something about myself. That's what I want you to like internalize. I don't know why all of, I partly know, but all of humanity is dead set on making you feel bad. Don't listen to them. It's bullshit. It's a great thing if you love yourself. And guys, I'll connect it to the pastor story that I was gonna make this point as my last point anyway, so it's a good connection. You know, on the overweight stuff, look, man, why have I been lucky enough to have success, you know, in dating attractive women later in my life? In the beginning, I was a nervous mess. Okay, I looked way better when I was younger, but I had way less success because I wasn't confident, right? And loving yourself leads to that confidence. And I can guarantee you, I remember, look, one of the top moments of my life, we kid around about it on the show all the time. But so when Zara, my ex-girlfriend, became Miss Jamaica and we went to Puerto Rico for the Miss Universe contest. And I was on the stage with them and Miss Ireland and Miss Poland were joking around and it was making Zara mad. And I remember pausing and soaking it in. I've got three Miss Universe contestants partly flirting with me and making my girlfriend, who is a Miss Universe contestant, upset. It doesn't get any better than that, okay? And I did all that with this body. Okay. So I swear to God to you that if you love yourself and you're confident, everything else will flow from that, including, you know, dating, relationships, etc. So that's your public service announcement for the day.
I like it.
All right. Rock and roll, time for a deep dive. Twitch.tv/TYT, Jordan Yule. And they're gonna be talking about OPP or something. Let me tell you what it is. Oh, PROACT, right, PRO. And that's Jonah Furman. They will not be talking about OPP. That is a completely different thing. They're gonna have a good substantive conversation about the PROACT. All right, guys, much love. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.